My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you very much. Remember the South Dixon group? I haven't found necessarily have a drink since January 25th, 1981. I tell you what, old age, it's not for sissies. I can tell you that. So it's been a great pleasure being here with everybody. I'm looking for something. I'm looking up something in the 12 and 12. I actually know it by memory, but I want to make sure I get this right. I don't want to get this thing wrong. Well, I'll probably. You know, it's funny. Whenever I start looking up something that I've known and I've read for 40 years, somehow I can never quite find it. Since 6 and 7, we can find that thing about money, property, romance, or prestige and romance. Okay, so listen, it's great to be here. I want to say a hello to a bunch of people. This is my understanding is that this room, this particular meeting, this step series, is the oldest step series in the state of Florida. I don't know whether it's 50, 60 years or something like that. I know I have been doing step series at this room for every year for approximately the last 30 years, I think. And I think the 1 year I missed it was last year when we all had this COVID thing going on. And I want to say hello to all my friends who are joining us. Got about 53 of them on Zoom and all the people in the room. And I know so many of you over the last 30, 40 years, you know, it's unbelievable. So many people I learned, I know. I made so many great friends that we're like family in the last year on Zoom. You know, I mean, many, many people from all over the world. I have a couple people I want to, Andrea from New York who came down. Yeah, I got you right. And then there's Cody from Atlanta and, came down, God bless you, and Bill L. from, I have no idea where you're from, Bill, Virginia? Are you guys, New Jersey. New Jersey, Bill, super, super guy. I want to say hi to Roy, who's here somewhere, who I've known for many, many years, used to be part of our group, and I just saw him up here now. And all the guys, you know, Jimmy, who came up here with me, and Clark, you know, did you get your cell phone? They found your cell phone, Clark, and Joe, who just picked up, I think, 90 days, and just so many people that I know here. It's just such a pleasure. Now, this is the 13th talk. I don't think this has ever happened to me before. This is, if for those of you who get the email or go on rocketed.org, this will be the 13th talk, and this will be on step 12. Now, I'm not going to go into how that happened, but there's the legitimate reason for it, okay? And so it's good to be here. I'm going to talk a little bit about step 12 and my own way. I think if you've been going to this meeting, I don't want you to get ahead of me, but it's probably going to mention God. There's a possibility, okay? And I'm probably going to get a little serious. We're going to have a little fun. We've had a lot of fun. I've had a lot of fun. You know, I come up here with these guys. This is the way we do step series. We're going to do one in Boca in October for 12 weeks, and then we're going to do the Sable Palm starting in a week from now. Down in Miami, but this is what we do. We all sort of come up together, a whole group of us, and we either have dinner at Lester's here beforehand or dinner afterwards, you know, the meeting after the meeting. So this is the way I was always taught to do AA, you know, not just you just come in and then you leave, and it's you get the whole evening. So I really enjoy it. So I'm going to have a little fun. We'll have a little fun. Well, I'll have some fun. I don't know about you guys. Oh, yeah, that's it. Okay, thank you so much. Appreciate it. You know. And so I've got something I want to sort of share with you. I want to try to connect some dots. You know, I don't know whether you've been in 90 days or 9 months or 5 years or 20 years, but I think I'm probably correct if I say whatever time you're in right now, you probably think of things differently. You probably have a different perspective on your life and who you are and your sobriety and what it all means, maybe on who God is or who isn't, than you had like a year ago. Or maybe even 3 months ago. You know, this is sort of like a moving deal where as you do the steps. And not only that, let me tell you something. I'll tell you, this has been I'm going to talk about my experience. Doesn't jive with yours. Don't worry about it. You don't have to do what I did. You don't have to be what I'm become. You don't have to get involved in any of this stuff. But my job is to share my experience, strength, and hope. So that's what I'm going to do. my sponsor used to say is, you know, when a man with experience gets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will walk away with an experience. And the greatest teacher, you know, I can read something, I can literally read a line in the big book and not see it. I can read, when my wife's first wife said to me, if you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. On a Friday morning, as I left my house and my wife and my child, and she said, if you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you, which I later learned didn't mean she was leaving me. It meant she was kicking me out of the house, you know, and I'm leaving you. I drove 3 blocks to a light, and I sat at the light. I remember thinking, what the hell do you mean by that? And this is a guy who graduated with departmental honors in mathematics. I was going to be a mathematics professor. I was going to get a PhD in algebraic topology or something like that. I can't even add now, you know. But I went to law school, became a division chief in the state's attorney's office. And when she said that to me, I was about as physically sober as I am right now. And I had no idea what the hell she was talking about. And, you know, in the 12 and 12, it says, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious. And of true happiness, he'll know none at all. I always like to have precarious sobriety. Of true happiness, he'll know none at all. And apparently there are consequences to being an alcoholic. And I thought, when I first came to AA, that being an alcoholic meant you couldn't stop drinking. That's what the first step is. Hey, the only qualification for membership is a desire to stop drinking. The only reason they hand out chips is they say, you have 3 months, you have 4 months. All the time they were saying, don't drink and go to meetings. They called the entire group, the organization, Alcoholics Anonymous. I think that I can be excused for thinking that this has to do, it's like a giant not drinking club. And that as long as you don't have a drink, you're okay. As a matter of fact, my first sponsor said to me, Russell, you could fuck up the whole day, but if you haven't had a drink and you're an alcoholic, you're a success. And I believed it. And I do believe that. I do believe that. But, you know, after 40 years, after 30 years, after 20 years, after 10 years sobriety, my thinking has changed a bit on that. It doesn't mean I think that's wrong. You know, it's like the book of Ecclesiastes, you know, where it says, you know, for every season, there's a different deal. There's a season when you have 3 months and your entire life is about drinking and not drinking, the obsession. And 6 months and the entire life is about drinking or not drinking. And then you have 2 years and your entire life is about money or no money. Or you got 5 years and your entire life is about sex or no sex. And then you got 10 years and it's all about prestige or security and no security. You know, there comes a time when it's not that drinking isn't important, it's very important, but there comes a time where it's not the drinking. And that about that time, all and one of the consequences of my alcoholism is sometimes if I hear something or I'm told something or I read something that I don't like, it confuses me. It doesn't matter how bright I am. You know, the big book says I can't separate the truth from the false. Part of the disease is I'm delusional. I just can't even figure things out that are right in front of me. I can't separate the truth from the false. My alcoholic life seems normal to me. Hurting people, yelling at people, being pissed off at people, being resentful seems normal to me. You tell me that I should change or not think that way. I say, no, that's because it didn't happen to you. If it happened to you, like it happened to me, you'd feel the same way. Because I believe everybody should feel exactly the way I feel. And there's no other way of handling this except being angry or feeling sorry for myself. And I hang out with people in bars where I drank who felt the same exact way. They felt the same exact way. Everybody I knew that I liked thought like I thought. They talked like I thought. They said the same phrases. They said things like, I'll show them. They don't know who they're fucking with. You know, why is this crap always happening to me? I can't believe this bullshit, you know? It's all, they talked like me. I understood them. You know, I mean, I thought the whole world talked like the guys in the bars. Well, there were these church people, they're stupid. you know, self-righteous idiots, you know what I mean? You know, they're not smart and spiritual and wonderful like the guys at the Alibi Lounge, you know what I mean? And so that's how I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, beating down to my knee. And, you know, somewhere along the line, I don't know whether I was 3 months sober, whether I was 6 months sober, you know, somebody can shout this thing at you, yell this thing at you. I've been accused of yelling at people, if you can believe that. And I admitted to it. I said, I am yelling at you. I am yelling at people. You know what I'm yelling? I'm saying, wake the fuck up. Wake up. I think the statistics are, I don't even know where I got this. It was actually written in a journal, but it could be bullshit. But I was told only 0.5% stay sober over 20 years. That's 1 in 200. That tells me in this group, there's 0.5% that's going to actually make it. Now, that's not true. Every one of you can make it. Every one of you can make it. And not only that, I've actually witnessed people that have 10 years and 15 years and 20 years sobriety, and they're not happy with their sobriety. Somewhere along the way, I started seeing things, because one of the consequences, I said, of this deal, of my thinking, is if you tell me something that I don't like, I get mad at it, I get pissed at you, or I don't see it, or I don't understand it, it's just not there. And so I pick up a book, and I go to meetings, and all they're talking about is drinking or not drinking. The only thing I see is about the jaywalker. That makes sense to me. And about the drinking, that makes sense to me. I don't see anything in there that has to do with God. You know, the only thing I see that has to do with God is I make up my own God, and it doesn't matter who your God is. And nobody can tell you who your God is. And nobody can even tell you whether you're an alcoholic. As a matter of fact, nobody can tell you shit. You know what I mean? That's what I see in Alcoholics Anonymous. Nobody can tell you anything. You understand? You do whatever you want to do in this deal. And everything will work out. I know there's this thing that says rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our steps. Pretty later on, we're going to give clear-cut directions. Well, one of the consequences of an alcoholic is I'm not really good at following directions. You know, I'm just not. You know, and I don't like people telling me what to do. The big book says I'm defiant. That's my chief characteristic, you know. You tell me this is what you need to do. I may not say it, but in the back of my mind, I say, go fuck yourself. That's just like a natural. Look, listen, I'm sorry. I get up here. You know, I love you all, you know, and I love the Lord. But, you know, the truth is I talk alky. You know, there's a great line in the Bible that says, I become all things to all men by whatever means possible to win some of them. And sometimes you just have to talk alky, you know, because in our minds, I know every one of you is using the F word. Every single one. You know, when the guy cuts in front of you or shoots you the bird, you don't say, hot damn. I can't believe that actually happened. You know? So I talk out when I'm talking to alcoholics. You know what I mean? Because I am an alcoholic. And I'm not ashamed of being an alcoholic. As a matter of fact, I'm grateful for being an alcoholic. I can't tell you how grateful I am that God thought enough about me that he chose to make me an alcoholic. I feel like the Apostle Paul when he says, when we had these great revelations and he hit the joy of living and he was free and he was unbelievable and he lived an incredible life. They're still talking about him 2,000 years later. And he says, to keep me from becoming conceited and full of myself, God gave me a thorn in my flesh. It was satanic. He never says what it is. We don't know what it is. Could have been alcoholism, pedophilia, could have been any. I thought he says it was satanic. I prayed to the Lord to take this thorn away. And the Lord said to me, I will not take it away. That's the answer he got is I will not take this away. He said, I will not take it away. Because when you're weak, he put it in to keep from becoming conceited. When you're weak, you're strong, which what he meant was when you're weak, I'm strong in you. Because if they took that thorn of alcoholism away with me, you know what I mean? As soon as I started, the money started coming in, as soon as people started smiling at me, I'd be off to the races and be a lounge listener and looking for the same crap I was looking for before I came in here. And you know what happens to me? What happens to me at 40 years? I'm just going to tell you what happens to me. every once in a while. Not so much anymore. After 40, not so much. I feel the alcoholism sort of come upon me. I feel something happens or I'm at a point where all of a sudden the loneliness comes around about me. Or the rage comes about me. Or the anger comes about me. Or the envy comes about me. Or the self-pity comes about me. Usually it only lasts moments. And as soon as it comes about me, you know what I do? I just wrap my arms around God. And I turn to Him immediately. Because you know what it does to me when I start feeling the alcoholism? All it tells me is, He still hasn't removed that damn thorn. You know what I mean? And so it's a blessing to me because He's got me on a short leash. And if you know anything about a guy like me, I need to be on a short leash. The last thing I want is for him to take me off the leash and say, go have fun. And, you know, I just love being on the leash, you know, an ambassador for him. So I sponsor a guy, and he's got about 25 years now. I've had the privilege, this is part of my service, sponsoring many men. And I sponsor a guy, and he's a pastor. He's got a PhD in divinity. And he's a good guy. He's a friend, and I sponsor him. And when I first started sponsoring him, and one of the reasons he got in is because his wife was complaining, everybody else was complaining. And so he tells me this story, so I'm going to pass it along to you. It's just a little story. Something to do with the 12th step. And I'm going to tell you a couple of fun stories. Well, some fun stories about step 12 and sponsoring people and stuff like that. And then I'm going to, in the last 10 or 15 minutes, I'm going to get serious. Okay? So what happened is, so he tells me that his wife was going to a psychiatrist to complain about him. Before he stopped drinking, to complain about him, about her husband's drinking. And he said, I got to tell you this story. And he hadn't had a drink in 3 or 4 months. He says, my wife went to her psychiatrist. She was just telling me that. And she told her psychiatrist, she says, the psychiatrist asked, how's your husband doing? And she said to the psychiatrist, he's not drinking. And the psychiatrist said, he's not drinking? He says, he stopped drinking. And the psychiatrist said, does he go to Alcoholics Anonymous? He says, yeah, he goes to all these meetings and he's not drinking. And then the psychiatrist said, does he have a sponsor? He says, yeah, and he's obnoxious. And the psychiatrist said, you know, some people need obnoxious. Some people need obnoxious. Some people need obnoxious. Some alcoholics need repeated humiliations and the final crushing of their self-sufficiency. Some people need to learn the value of suffering. Some people need to suffer. I'm one of those people. And guess what? It ain't really optional because I'm on a short leash and alcohol and the life is a humbling experience. Like John Wayne says, right? Life is tough, and if you're stupid, it's even tougher. And I'm the kind of guy that I do stupid shit all the time, thinking it's right, because I have grouches and I have brainstorms and all this sort of stuff. And I keep on getting slammed down and slammed down. And somewhere around the fifth year, I start saying things like, I need to stop doing that shit. You know, I need to stop spending money I don't have, buying crap I don't need to impress people I don't like, and then I do it again and again and again. Then I go to A meetings and complain about not having money. And I wake up 3 o'clock in the morning saying, how am I going to pay the Visa bill? How did I get in this jam? And then at 9 years sober, my sponsor explains to me, the math professor, that when you spend more money than you make, you go into something called debt. And I said, holy shit, where do you learn this crap? Who knew? And then I read something in the big book, and it says alcohol. You know this thing about the alcohol? You got a medallion, you got a chip. It says alcohol is only a symptom of the... Hey, it's a hell of a symptom. It's only a symptom. The real disease centers in my mind and not my body. And after being beaten up and beaten up and beaten up and beaten up and beaten up... You know, I play golf. I'm a terrible golfer. Terrible golfer. One of the things Bill does is works with golf pros and everything like that. I'm a terrible golfer. And I go out and, you know, you like, I don't know how many strokes a good golfer hits on a golf course, 72. But I hit 172. The worst golfer in the world. But every once in a while, I hit it right down the middle, like 220 yards. And I say, holy shit, I am Tiger Woods. And it keeps me coming back. And that's the way life is to me, the first 10 years. Constantly being beaten down, beaten down, beaten down, beaten down. Every once in a while, right down the middle, 150 yards. I say, hey, this A thing is great. You know what I mean? And God is great, you know? But it gets better. It gets better as it goes along. And all of a sudden I start reading things in the big book that I never read before. Reading things about what the book is all about, not about the drinking. Because all of a sudden, I don't have an obsession to drink. I don't want to drink. I may want to kill myself. Drinking may be out of the question. You go through a period of time, that's actually progress. When you want to kill you, because, you know, the truth is, when you drink, if you're an alcoholic, it's really a form of suicide. Paul Manich wrote a book, Man Against Himself, all about suicide. He said, alcoholics, men and women who are out to destroy themselves. So, see, just think about it. When you feel so lousy about yourself that you're ruining your life and you can't stop, the great thing about drinking is it's like dying temporarily. You see, many times I wish I was dead. I just want to skip the dying part. You know what I mean? You drink, it all goes away. It all goes away, you know? I've sobered up many times. I mean, your liver will do that for you. You know what I mean? And I get sober, and then I'm back again. So it's sort of like that deal. But the bottom line is that as I go along, all of a sudden I start reading other things in the big book. I read something, and it says there, and sometimes I'll read it, and I won't even understand it. Sometimes I'll read it, and I won't even understand it. It says there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Has anybody ever heard that? Yes. Have you ever thought about what that actually says? No, we read it all the time, right? There is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Have you ever thought of what that actually means? There's one that has all power. Does it say there's three that has all power? Does it say it's 50 that has all power? It says there's one that has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. So it tells you a couple of things. It tells you there's only one. There ain't 15. They may tell you, you pick your higher power, you pick your higher power, you pick this God, you pick that God. That's not the God they're talking about that's going to keep you. You see, there reaches a point in time. We're not drinking. Trust me on this. We're not drinking. Ain't going to be enough for you. I want to tell you, I swear to God, you're going to find, you'll remember this deal. It may be a 10 years, it may be a 20 years. You're going to learn all about the disease. There's going to be a point in time where being a member of the not drinking club is not going to be enough for you. You're either going to drink again or be miserable. There's going to reach a point in time where you've heard everything that needs to be heard in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you've heard it 50 times. There is a point in time where you've sponsored everybody, you've run around, you're doing everything, and because you're running around and doing everything, you're not drinking because you're involved in the work, but you're not happy. You're not happy with your sobriety. You're not experiencing the joy of living. You have no idea what they're talking about then when they're saying you're being rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which you would not even dream. You're not experiencing that true happiness. You're not experiencing the promise of fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave you. As a matter of fact, you're still scared of the money thing and you're still worried about what other people think about you. It's going to reach that point in time, man. As a matter of fact, most people will never experience getting rid of the fear of other people's judgment. Most people will never get the experience of getting worried about the money or worried about what other people think about it. The big book says this. That's what it says. It says, we never apologize for God. There are people in AA that will read the big book and see those parts where it says, there is one who has all power, that one is God, and you find him now. They'll say the part, we must, above everything, we must get rid of this selfishness, we must, or it kills us, God makes that possible. There are people that will read the part that says we're on a new basis of trust and relying upon God. Job and no job, you can always stay sober as long as you trust God. But we won't know you, it doesn't matter. Your real reliance has to be on God. He'll even show who to hang out with. There are people that are going to read the stuff in the big book, see what your relationship with him is right, and great events will come fast for you and countless others. They will read that stuff in the big book, and they will incorporate it into their lives. They won't be scared of it. They'll read the part in the big book where it says, we encourage you to go to churches and the synagogues and join religious organizations. It even says we will lose all prejudice, even against those deals, you know, and we will join it because it'll help us and we can help other people. They'll read that even though it says extra credit, and they won't worry about looking for loopholes why they don't have to do it. They will do it because that's what the old timers did it, and they wanted thoroughly, and they will do it. And they will speak about that and proclaim God and talk about God in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they'll talk about him in such a way so they're not apologizing for it and they're unashamed. And then there are people in AA that have 20 years that will tell those people they ought to be quiet about it. Don't talk about it. You might scare with me because they're scared. They're scared that if that gets around, they might have to do it. And they'll use all sorts of excuses, like you might scare away the newcomers, when quite frankly, that's what the newcomers want to hear. That's what they need to hear. That's what Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson was talking about. When Dr. Bob said to Clarence, the brewmaster, he said, do you believe in God? He said, what does that have to do with him? Dr. Bob said, everything. Get down on your knees. We're going to pray to God. Well, I don't know how to do it. I guess you don't. Just follow me. You know, that's what the bottom line is going to be. You're going to have two types of people in A, the people that talk about God and the people that get angry about people that talk about God because it makes them uncomfortable. And you're going to get to rub elbows and see both types of people, and you get to decide what kind of sobriety you want. Because I can promise you this, your sobriety and your future and your joy of living will absolutely depend upon which person you choose to hang out with. Whether you continue to want to be cool and defiant, and not open-minded, and not grow, not only maintain maintenance and growth of a spiritual condition, or whether you choose to be the guy who's criticizing people that are talking about God. You'll find there's two types. You'll get to determine who's scared and who's not scared, who's living a life of fear and worrying about what people think about him, and who's really just focused on God, because it says, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, this is if you want to be rocked in the fourth dimension of existence, if you want to experience much of heaven, the great fact is this and nothing less, that God's got to be the central fact of your life. That you must become convinced that he lives in your heart and mind in a way which is miraculous. And if that bothers you, and the implications of that bothers you, you don't get mad at me. You can get mad at me. I don't take it personally. You need to contact New York and tell them to take all that shit out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because it's all there, plus a lot more, really. So let me do about 5 minutes, some fun stuff, and then get the last 10 minutes some heavy. So I sponsored a guy named Kevin. You got to have a lot of fun in AA. So I'm sponsoring a guy named Kevin. Kevin was a great guy. I love Kevin. I loved him. He lived with us for 6 months. And I can't even describe, I don't want to take too much time describing Kevin, but Kevin was a great guy. He wanted so much to get sober. He kept on slipping. He had such problems. He always had problems with the women. There's a big problems with women. A lot of guys have problems with the women. And, you know, listen to me. Let me tell you something about higher power. Let me just tell you about HP. HP is not God. I don't care what the big, it's not. You know why? Because a redhead with breasts is a higher power to me. Sure, you're laughing, Tony. You don't know what it's like. $10,000 is a higher power to me. A brand new Maserati is a higher power to me. A job where I make a lot of money and I have prestige is a higher power to me. A nice suit of clothes is a higher power. High paying jobs, a nice suit of clothes. This entire world is a higher power to me. So let me tell you something. If I'm looking for a higher power, people could be a higher power to me. And you know something? When you come to AA, more than likely what's going to happen is you're going to pick a person to be your higher power, and that's not bad necessarily. Or a group to be a higher power, and that's not bad necessarily. Because we're in kindergarten here. It's a big, giant kindergarten. But the bottom line is my problem. I got this great book called The 12 and 12, and it says, where was that thing? It says, oh, here it is. Certainly no alcoholic and surely no member of AA wants to deprecate material achievement, nor do we enter into a debate with many who still so passionately cling to the belief that to satisfy our basic natural desires is the main object of life. But we are sure that no class of people in the world ever made a worse mess of trying to live by this formula than alcoholics. For thousands of years, we have been demanding more than our share of security, prestige, and romance. And lump sex into that too. Romance. When we seem to be succeeding, we drank dreams, still greater dreams. When we were frustrated in part, we drank to oblivion. Never was there enough of what we thought we wanted. And the bottom line is that I am a world-class world whore. I am a whore for the world. I am part of my alcoholism. One of the consequences of my alcoholism is I am a world whore, period. And if you're not, if you don't understand that you're that, then I'll tell you something. You need some insight. You need to look some more insight into your life. I am a guy just like Bill Wilson. The worldly clamors of this world will pull me off to the side, and I'll be drinking over that stuff or feeling sorry for myself over that stuff. Before I know it, I'm in the land of self-pity. I'm in the land of envy. I'm in the land I might as well kill myself. I'll never be okay. And it's all about the stuff in this world. I'm not strong enough. The higher powers in this world will overcome anything I have unless there is something that can save me from not only the booze, but the lust and the addiction to the women, the lust and the addiction to the sex, the lust and the addiction to the money, the lust and the addiction to the prestige, the lust and the addiction to your approval of me. Unless I have find some power that will save me from that power. And you know some, it's not, you know what I need? I need the one who has all power. You guys probably get along in the assistant deputy, assistant power. But I have grave emotional mental disorders. I need the one who has all power. And my big book says that one is God. May you find him now. You know why people say HB in rooms? You know why? Because they don't want to be criticized. They don't want people looking at them funny. Because to say God, they know it'll piss some people off and they'll roll their eyes. And you know why they feel that way? Because they're scared of other people's judgment. And they will never lose that. They will always be scared of other people. That's why they say it. That's why they won't say God. And you know why people use the word God in AA? Not only because it's in the big book, because he's the one who has all power. Because they're not scared of you. Because their focus is on God. And somehow, some way, we have a thing called the sixth step. Sixth step is the step that separates men from the boys, because there are men here and there are boys. There are girls here and there are women. And what my book tells me is the men and the girls, the women, are the ones that repeatedly try this stuff for a lifetime so that they can repeatedly try to grow in the image and likeness of their creator, image and likeness of God. I know who God is. He's the one who has all power. Knowing that they will never be perfect. They will never be perfect, but they shoot for perfection like an Olympic athlete. They keep on trying to grow in that image and likeness of their creator. And as a result of that, they change. They have a psychic change. Now, I don't know who your creator is. I'm not going to tell you who he is, but I hope he's somebody that has all power. I hope he has all power. I don't know whether a tree has all power. I don't know whether nature has all power. Personally, I don't think nature. Nature is something within the universe. I don't know whether a hurricane has all power. God, in my understanding, has power over the entire universe. He's outside the universe. He's stronger than anything. Because I need that kind of God, because I saw crazy shit going on in my life. So I was sponsoring Kevin. Well, Kevin's story. So Kevin calls me up one day. He would come day, he would clean up, he would look great, sort of like a Clint Eastwood guy. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, he's got 3 months and he's living with a guy who's got like 15 months. Calls me up one night and he says, Russell, I said, what, Kevin? He says, last night while I was sleeping, Joni, I'm changing the name, tried to stab me with scissors. So I say to Kevin, Kevin, when a woman tries to stab you with scissors in the middle of the night while you're sleeping, that's God's way of telling you it's time to move out of the house. Now, I know that seems obvious to you. I mean, I know you're laughing at it. Listen to me. I know you're going to be shocked at this. It wasn't really that obvious to Kevin. Kevin said to me, he says, no, Russell, you don't understand, which apparently I get a lot. Apparently, notwithstanding the fact that I'm 72 years old, I used to be brilliant. I have degrees on the wall attesting to my brilliance. Notwithstanding the fact that I'm 72 years old and I got over 40 years sobriety, and I've been working this thing, apparently one of the problems that happens as you work this thing after 40 years is my IQ has been reduced, because every time I try to tell somebody who calls me up what my opinion is, because they ask my opinion, and I always make the mistake of thinking that they're actually interested, but they ask my opinion and I tell them, the first thing they say is, you don't understand. So apparently I'm not that bright. You understand what I'm saying? I'm not doing that well, you know? So it's the senility thing, you know? And then he explains to me, Russ, what about love? What about compassion? What about giving person? What about tolerance? What about love and tolerance? What about giving a person a second chance? Don't we give people second chances in AA? You know? But we're not perfect, you know, and everything like that. And the bottom line is that, and next thing you know, I start thinking, hey, maybe he's right, you know? And I'm thinking maybe I should check into Al-Anon or something. It sort of bothers me, you know? I'm just, we have a power to drive people crazy. And next thing I know, Kevin's drinking. So Kevin gets sentenced to the state prison. And at part of the sentence, after he gets out, he goes to Avon Park, which is like a drug facility, co-ed, you know, for like 9 months, whatever, he's supposed to go there and dry out or whatever it is. And so he does that deal. He's in Avon Park for about two or three months, and they kick him out. He leaves because one condition, he can't fraternize. So he meets a gal, and he's got like 3 months, and she's got like 3 months, you know. So it's like really a match made in heaven, you know what I mean? Because they both have something in common. They're both fucking crazy, you know what I mean? And It's like if you're a bad driver, they say, well, I got something in common with this girl. I says, what? She's an alcoholic too. I said, oh, it's sort of like if you're a bad driver and she's a bad driver, the rate should be less. You know what I mean? And he calls me up. We're supposed to meet in Tampa at Burns Steakhouse, and he doesn't show up. And I say, Kevin, I said, where are you? We're at Burns. We're supposed to show up with your girlfriend, Danny, you know, and who's gorgeous. Really, she's going to show up. And he says, Russell, you wouldn't believe this. I said, what, Kevin? He says, Annie is on the upstairs on the balcony, and she's holding a butcher knife and a bottle of vodka, and she's drunk, and she's screaming at me. I said, Kevin, what is she screaming? He says, she's screaming at me to leave. I said, Kevin, I want you to listen to me very carefully. I want you to leave and come here. He says, Russell, he says, you don't understand. He says, I know, don't get ahead of me. He says, you know, she's drunk. She's got a butcher knife. What if she kills herself? How could I do this? I said, what is she doing now? She keeps screaming at me to leave. I said, Kevin, leave. And of course, he didn't leave. And he was as physically sober as I am right now. And of course, he ended up drunk and arrested again and everything like that. So I don't want you to miss the fun of sponsoring other people. There is a connection. There is a connection. I want to read you something. You're going to find that there's a time when you're in AA and you're doing everything in AA. You're doing everything they say in the book. Well, you're really not doing everything in the book, but you think you're doing everything you say in the book. But what you've really done is you've settled. That's what they talk about in the sixth step. He says, don't settle. You've settled. And you're able to look somebody in the eye, no matter what they say, and say, listen, I'm not drinking. I'm not even thinking about drinking. Get off my back. You don't have to call up your sponsor that much, or maybe you got a sponsor that doesn't rattle your cage. Get one of those sponsors that isn't obnoxious. You know, don't get anybody that's telling you shit you don't want to hear. And you might turn to page 62 in the big book, and I want to read these two paragraphs, because one of the great things about Alcoholics Anonymous is many times, you know, we have a thing called the big book because it's a big book. But let me tell you, there are paragraphs in AA that tell you everything. Everything you need to know about the big, everything you need to know about the real deal here. And there are paragraphs that people don't even see. They're invisible paragraphs. I talked about this last week. There's two books. There's the book you read and then there's the invisible book. There are paragraphs that people don't even see. And even if they read them and they see them, you know what I mean? They don't really see them. It doesn't connect. They don't really read the words. They don't read them slowly. I've had people come up to me after a meeting or after a talk I do, and they say, man, I loved it when you said this. And I said, what? He said that. When you said this. I said, you mean when I quoted the big book? He says, yeah, but it's the way you say it. I understand what they're saying. They've read it, but they never heard it before. They never put it together. So let me read you this. This is the how and why of it. How many people want a remarkable life? How many people don't give a shit? They just want to stop drinking. And how many people want a remarkable life? Want to stop drinking and be rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence and know a new freedom and a new happiness. You know what I mean? How many people would like that to you? If you're going to hang around, you might as well go for the real deal. So here's what it says, right here on page 62. This is the how and why of it. This is the how and why of it. You want to underline that sucker. First of all, we had to quit playing God. Hey, let me tell you something. When you start making up your own God, you're playing God. That's really a little bit too metaphysical. Epistemological. I don't know. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that here and after in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. And they're using the G word. They weren't ashamed. They never apologized for God. We never apologized for God. Instead, all men of faith have courage. They trust their God. Instead, we let him demonstrate in our lives what he can do with us. How we can work in our lives. Next, we decide that here and after in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal and we are his agents. He is the father and we are his children. That's the way they're describing God. Principal, agent, new employer. I say to a guy, you know, why don't you go to this meeting with me? He says, no, I got work to do. It doesn't matter what his life depends on. Why are you going to go? Your wife has given birth. He says, I can't. My employer says I got to work. You know, people follow their worldly employer and think that's more important, the worldly employer, than to follow their divine employer. They'll do the most outrageous things without even thinking about it for a worldly employer that they won't do for a divine employer. He is the principal and we are his agents. He is the father and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone, the main deal of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass the freedom. You don't figure out this deal. You don't figure out there is one that is all power, that one is God. You don't figure out the image of God. You don't figure out how can you grow in the image and likeness of God when you don't have his image? When it's a fluffy thing for you. It's like, God, he's a fluffy thing. How are you going to grow in the image and likeness of God when you have no idea who he is or what he wants you to be? The answer is you're not. When we sincerely took such a position, what does it mean sincerely took such a position? Well, it doesn't mean, you know, we just say, oh, yeah, I believe in God or, you know, that kind of thing. When we sincerely took, all sorts of remarkable things follow. Okay, you want to talk about remarkable things? We had a new employer. There it is again, being all powerful. Listen, here's the way it works. There's one who has all power. One, may you find him now. Most people won't find him. 80% of people that are in this thing probably won't find him. They'll find something that allow them to stay sober for 10, 15, 20 years. Some will never find him. Some of them don't want to find him. It's okay. I'm just reading this shit out of the big book. You know, I'm not making this stuff up. If you think it's obnoxious, then you're not calling me obnoxious. You're calling the people who wrote this book obnoxious. We had a new employer, being all powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. How are you going to keep close to him when you don't even know who he is? How you can perform his work well when you don't know what his work is for you? You each has been given work to do. You're not here. You know, people say, well, I'm not happy. Well, where did you get the idea that you were placed on the planet to be happy? To be happy in the sense that the most important thing is that you not suffer and be happy. Maybe you're placed here to do God's will. Maybe God's will for you is, even though you're not happy, to go down to a detox or go to a meeting and try to help somebody else. I don't know. I read a book that says, you know, his work for me is what I'm supposed to do is to be a maximum help to other people. I read a book where it says I got to be the good Samaritan. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You know, I got to go down and it's got to completely interfere with my life. That's what it says. That's what the book says. Jane, my phone will jangle at any time during the night. Kevin will call. Said, you got to meet this gal. I just said, yeah, I'll be handling people. I'll be driving an hour and a half up to this group. Now, next month, I'll be going over the book. I read a book that says my life is about trying to help other people. It has nothing to do with trying to figure out how I should be happy. Surprisingly, when I start growing in his image and likeness, I pray that's happening. I'm so far short of it. What happens is, the funny thing is, all of a sudden, I just want to do that. All of a sudden, I'm not going to meetings just to stay sober. I'm going to meetings to see whether I can help people. And it becomes pleasant for me. His work well. Established on that footing, we become less and less interested in ourselves and our little plans and designs. More and more, we become interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we become conscious of his presence. Are you conscious all the time of his presence? Do you always think about God? Do you drive in your car thinking about God? Do you walk along the street thinking about God? When you're going to sleep, are you thinking about God? When you're waking up, are you thinking about God? That sounds a little obnoxious, right? Well, I'm an obnoxious type of guy. As we felt new power, we could face life successfully. As we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. That's all. You want to know something? That's all you need to know about where you have to be in this program. You know, don't let anybody bullshit you and saying God's not important. Don't let anybody feed you the crap that just do a good fourth step and a good fifth step and a do a sixth and everything will be wonderful and just don't drink and go to meetings. Don't let them feed you. Look, you're early on. You're new. You don't understand any of this stuff. Go with the flow. You know, stick with the winners. Stick with the winners. You know, you don't have to listen. And you look, I got 40 years. I can't make believe that. This is stuff I've learned after 40. I fucked up everything you could possibly fuck up in AA except drinking. You know what I mean? So, I mean, this isn't after 3 months. I can't talk like I have 2 days. I can't talk like I have 10 years. I couldn't give this talk at 20 years. I've got over 40 years experience doing this stuff. I'm living an amazing life because of God. I give him all credit. Like Bill Wilson said, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of his terrible disease. I got to keep talking about him, telling other people. And I've been asked to talk about the 12 step. The 12th step is, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to other alcoholics. You tell me, what message should I be carrying to other alcoholics? What message should I be talking about with other alcoholics? Should I be talking about the message I had when I had 3 months? Should I be talking about the message I had when I had 10 years? What message should I be talking about if I'm going to follow God's will? Should I be worried about some clown back there that doesn't like the fact that I'm talking about God or the tone of my voice? What message should I be worrying about when I know there's at least one guy here and one gal here that needs to hear this message, that wants to hear this message? Why should I care about the person that could give a crap about this message who's going to drink anyway because they haven't even done step one? You know, my job is to carry the message of my sobriety, my experience, strength, and hope. And that's what I've done tonight. Thank you very much.